The following program is a presentation of Grace Communion International and Grace Communion Seminary, and is made possible by generous donations from viewers like you. On this episode of You're Included, theologian Dr. Andrew Root explains the importance of building relationships in youth ministry. Our host is Dr. J. Michael Fizell.
Thanks for joining us again.
Great to be back.
Last time we were together, we were talking about place sharing versus influence in terms of how we relate to young people. Mm-hmm. What is the difference?
Yeah, it's a great question. And that's really the point of both of the two books, is to try to draw that contrast. And last time I tried to argue that we've tended to see youth ministry as for influence, to try to influence kids towards some end. Where the reimagining of it is really to think of it as play sharing, which is actually a concept I stole from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But Bonhoeffer wanted to make this argument that the way we really experience God is as our play sharer. And he said in his Ethics, he said, just as a good politician is for her people, a good teacher is for his students, and a good father is for his children, so Jesus Christ is for us. Jesus Christ shares our place. And I think we've tended to see youth ministry as trying to influence kids towards some end as opposed to sharing their place. The story I often tell is, and I think when we think of influence, we get the whole understanding of the incarnation all mixed up, that we tend to think the incarnation happened to influence us towards some end, as opposed to sharing our place. So the story I often tell is every Christmas Eve, we go to my grandmother's house, and as soon as dinner's done and the coffee is brewing and the Christmas cookies come out, we'll all move from the table to the couches. And often my grandma will leave the party, and she'll come back with this folded piece of newspaper. And it's the story that I'm sure many have heard. It's the Paul Harvey story about the birds. And the story goes that there's this man who refuses to go to church one Christmas Eve. He's basically done with his faith. He doesn't believe it anymore. And it's a cold, cold, bitter cold night. And he's not doing it. He's going to stay home. He's going to actually enjoy his Christmas Eve. So he sees his family all off to church, and he lays down on the couch to have this wonderful Christmas Eve. And he kind of laughs to himself, thinking how much smarter he is as he looks out his window, and it's so cold. Well, about halfway through his night, he looks outside that same window, and he sees there are some birds. And he gets very concerned that if he doesn't do something for these birds, they're going to die. I mean, it is a cold, bitter cold night, and if they won't make it through the night if he doesn't do something. So he gets his hat and his gloves and his boots on, and he goes outside, and he opens his barn door, and he tries to shoo these birds into the barn. But of course, he's too big, and he's too scary. The birds don't understand him, so they jump away. So he tries to get again to shoo them in, but they just won't go. So he gets some bird seed and tries to make a trail, but it just isn't happening. And so he's frustrated because he knows if he doesn't get these birds into the barn that they're not going to make it through the night, that they're going to die. So he tries one more time to shoo them in, but it just isn't working. And in pure frustration, he says, if only I could become a bird, then they wouldn't be scared of me, and I could lead them into the barn, and they would be safe. And of course, just as he says that, the church bells ring. He falls on his knees, and for the first time, he understands the meaning of Christmas. And every year, my grandma will fold that newspaper up and wipe a tear from her eye and lean back in satisfaction. And I always think it, but never say it. I always think, Grandma, that's a great story. I can see why you love it so much, but it's not the incarnation. And I think the church has developed this understanding that the incarnation isn't for simply getting us in the barn, but actually sharing our place. That we need a God who doesn't just come close to us to lead us into some place that we're okay, but we need a God who actually shares our hell with us, who bears the cold night with us. So really, what I'm after is trying to develop a theology for youth ministry that can bear the dark night with kids, that can enter into their lives at its most frigid points and be with and for them in the confession that Jesus Christ is with and for us, born from that eternal relationship of the Father being for the Son as the Son is for the Father. And so that's, I think, what I'm after when we talk about play sharing, of trying to do ministry that's faithful to this theological assertion that God is with and for us in Jesus Christ, sharing our place all the way to hell for the sake of life.
It's significant, it seems, as you were telling that story, when Jesus says, I am the way, I am the life, that's different from saying, follow me and I'll take you to a new place that's better than this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a real key element that I'm hoping to push forward in these works, is that it's something about persons, and Jesus calls us to his person, to find life inside of his person, which is really a reflection in our relationship with Jesus. As he calls us, he says, come to me, or I am the life, or I am the vine, and you are the branches, is really a manifestation of the relationship he has with the Father. And he calls us then to live near his person. So my argument is that when we live in relationships that are human person to human person, where we actually share in each other's lives, that is a reflection and a way of living into the inner reality of God's own life and God's own love for the Father to the Son. So yeah, I think there is something about human person to human person. And usually we tend to think about our ministries as pastor or youth worker to kids or to other people. And we tend to find ourselves in that specialized role, well, I'm the youth pastor. And I actually tend to think that adolescents don't need youth pastors in their life. They don't need youth workers. They need human beings. They need people who will actually be in relationship with them. They don't need a specialized someone who can knows all this information that can actually keep them distance from their life. What young people actually need is human beings to be in relationship with. And I think too often we get stuck in these specialized forms of action that actually keep us from being human with them. And I think that what we're really after is being human alongside and with young people as Jesus Christ is human with and for us.
So how does that look in terms of what is the difference between having a relationship with somebody and being or sharing place with them and being there with them in sharing the humanity? What does it look like?
Yeah. I think it plays out in a couple different ways. One of the interesting elements of doing a relational ministry of influence, if we get stuck in that rut, is that influence really can't suffer with young people. It's either got another agenda that it needs to go to, so it's so quickly wipes away adolescent suffering or tells adolescents, oh, don't worry about that. Or if you pray about that, that will all go away. Or else, even more diabolical, it uses suffering as another carrot. That says, oh, look, I can suffer with you, so you should listen to me and let me lead you to where you need to go. But it can't really suffer with and for young people. I was at a conference a few years back now, and it was a really unique conference because it brought together some academics, it brought together some paid professional youth workers, some publishers, as well as a number of volunteers were in this room. And it was a conference where they were laying out the findings to a study that they'd done. I don't know if it was number 4. One of the points was that relationships really matter, that relationships are really important. And after the presenter said this, a man probably in his early 30s raised his hand, and they invited him to talk, and he was just a volunteer in his church, and he said, you know, I get it. I get that relationships are really important, but relationships can be really hurtful too. Mm. And then he went on to explain. He said, when I was in high school, my parents were going through a really messy divorce, and it was really difficult for me. And I don't know if it was in the midst of the chaos or what have you, but I found myself really attracted to some Buddhist literature. It was something about the meditation that really calmed all the chaos that was going on in my life. So I started to read it, and I was more just interested in it, but I just started to read it. And he said, my youth worker came up to me and said, you know what, you better not read that stuff. That's a false religion. That stuff is corrupt. It's my job as your youth worker to make sure you make the right choices and stay faithful to Jesus Christ, so you better not do that anymore. So he said, you know, I heard him, and we were close, but there was just something about it that I kept reading. My life was so chaotic, I just kept reading. And he warned me one more time, you better not do that. Well, he said, sure enough, after 2 or 3 months, he stopped calling me. And I didn't talk to him for most of the rest of my high school years. And his point was, he said, you know, I see that relationships can be really powerful, but relationships can actually be really hurtful as well. And in that story, what happens is you have a youth worker who confuses their ministry, and it isn't about sharing in the young person's life, but influencing them towards some end. And when the young person can't conform to the agenda that the youth worker wants them to go, they feel justified in cutting the relationship loose. Where I think imagining our relational ministry as play sharing actually calls us to be faithful to the young person in the situation. So the depressed girl that we have in our youth group, if we're trying to influence her, the objective of our ministry is to get her over our depression, get her over her depression. But if the objective is really to share her place, then we confess that only God can heal her, only God can come near to her and heal her broken humanity, and we're called to join her in her suffering. And I think often part of the problem with seeing our ministries as influence is it can't suffer, and therefore it lacks some reflection of who God is for us in Jesus Christ, which is to take on our suffering, to take on death in its fullest, and then break death by being overtaken by death in the resurrection.
Isn't it kind of hard to de-link, let's say, from or unhook from the sense of need to influence and fix?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really hard. It's incredibly difficult. And I think that's the whole specialization that we fall into. That, of course, is so common in our culture. I mean, if you drop your computer, usually you have to go to a specialist to fix it. Or if something's not working on your computer, there's a different specialist that runs the software and another one that works with the hardware. So we're so used to specialization. And I think youth ministry has fallen into that. And we hear this all the time when we invite other adults in the congregation to volunteer to participate in the youth group or to participate in confirmation or something. You'll hear them say, well, I did that 10 years ago, or I don't know what I'm doing. And essentially, and sometimes you'll even hear them say, well, that's what we paid you to do. And what, of course, that means is you're the one who's specialized. You've received the specialized training to do this. So often the real problem with youth ministry is that it tends to let the church off the hook, that we hire someone who does ministry with our children, therefore we don't have to. Where I think a better way of looking at the youth worker or even the paid youth pastor is not as the one who does the ministry, but someone who equips and is trained to equip the rest of the congregation to do ministry with their own children. So I think that's where we really get hooked, is that we think, well, it's my job as a specialist to influence kids. Therefore, when I have my end of the year evaluation, what will I point to as having done a good job? So it is a full paradigm shift in how we even think about ministry. But my point is to try to embed that in our theological commitments, more than simply kind of pragmatism of what will work and how do we get it to work, and try to really drive towards, what does it mean to be faithful to who God is?
Don't we do the same thing with our children? Isn't our goal usually to influence them? We feel like we have a duty to influence them. So how does that affect relationship when you are continually looking for getting the kids fixed and get them to do the right thing in a direct way that we always approach it as parents? I suppose it's somewhat rhetorical, but don't we accomplish more when we do try to share their place as opposed to just the right-handed force of forced compliance?
Right. I think so. And I think we all probably can point to people in our lives who have been really meaningful to us, and that we really changed in relationship with them, and it's often been because they shared our place more than they demanded we conform to something. And it is true that all relationships do influence. So it isn't to say that influence isn't found anywhere, even in authentic, real relationships. But the question is what's the driving force? And my wife and I didn't decide to have our son because I thought, you know what? I hate having to go find the remote. And it would be great to have a little kid that I could get to go find the remote for me, or I'm sick of unloading the dishwasher. So what I need is a child to unload the dishwasher for me. Or even maybe more close to home for some of us, or what I need is to have a son that can do all the things that I didn't do. So I need to make him into what I wasn't. So I need to get him to an Ivy League school. I need to, And that, of course, becomes diabolical parenting. And I think this reflects to our Trinitarian commitments that God chooses to create out of God's own inner love. And it's out of desire to be with and for Father to Son that God creates something. Bart beautifully says that the Trinity exists in a relationship before creation even exists. And God creates out of the play sharing, in many ways, of the Trinity itself, that the Trinity desires to be with and for itself. And out of the abundance of that love, it creates. And in the same way, in the best of marriages, we have children out of the reality of our love for one another. And of course, once our children exist, we put certain demands on them. We say certain things like, we need you to do this. But where those often, even those rules, are function best within the relationship. When we say, you can't act that way because you're my boy. You belong to me. You're mine. And I love you, as opposed to, if you want to belong, if you want to have a place here, then you better get on board, or else you need to find somewhere else to be. And of course, we all have experiences where we've heard similar things, but I think there is something about play sharing that we often fall into the trap of this kind of individualized, competitive culture where we think that our job is to influence our young people instead of being with and for them.
Well, let me ask you this, from what you've experienced in youth ministry. Studies have shown, as you well know, that parents have far less influence on their kids than they think they do, that it's peers who actually have the influence on one another. Is that in part, or largely perhaps, because peers are, by nature, place sharing with one another?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe to kind of take a step back and try to answer it and sociologically a little bit. There's been some great work done by a British sociologist named Anthony Giddens. And one of Anthony Giddens' essential arguments for what's happened in late modernity in our time is he argues that all relationships have become what he calls pure, and what he calls it, the pure relationship. And I've kind of redefined that a little bit and called it the self-chosen relationship. And his argument is that sometime in the mid-century and moving on into our own time, into late modernity, that all of our relationships are really self-chosen. That for most of human history, you were given these people, whether it was in a village or a religious group, and you lived with these people, like it or hate it. You were bound to these people, and if you wanted to survive, you needed these people. Well, because of the operations of modernization leading into globalization, we're free. At 15, 16, 17, of course, you see this in Los Angeles all the time. 15-year-old from the Midwest decides, I hate my family, I'm moving to L.A. and I'm going to be an actor. And the idea that you can even choose to do that, Giddens says, is a really new cultural phenomenon. But couple that with the high school, the creation of the high school, where young people are spending most of their meaningful hours in a day with their peers, as opposed to working in a little business or working the land with their uncles and their parents. Now they're in just a peer government institution. The argument that I try to make at the first half of Revisiting Relational Youth Ministry is that the very task of the adolescent becomes formulating relationships in this self-chosen manner. And they're free to choose those however they want to choose them. There's no tradition or family expectations anymore for the most part. You're completely up to you to formulate your needed intimate relationships. So I think young people's whole lives are organized around trying to construct meaningful relationships with themselves. And their friends, I think some of their closest friends maybe do become play sharers. But there's also this incredibly rich tapestry of power going on in a high school campus where they're defining each other as cool or uncool and all these things are happening. But it makes great sense that we would talk about relational ministry and youth ministry because young people, their whole lives, are trying to seek out relationships in these self-chosen arenas where all the relationships they have to choose for themselves. So I think that is a really driving force for them, that they're always trying to figure out who are these people? Should I love these people? Should I hate these people? And I think parents do, in a real way, influence young people, their own children, in a great manner. But where young people will self-report, whether it's true, and I think there's always debate between sociologists of how much parents actually do influence their young people or how much they do impact them. If you ask young people to self-report what's the most important thing in their life, they will say their friends. And that's because they're trying to work out who they are and where they belong in the midst of this realm of self-chosen relationships.
And is that good or bad?
It is. I mean, that movie, it just is. And there's no way, I think, to change that. If we see it as the way it is, what it does mean is we can't just simply wipe relational ministry off the map. I mean, I think, hence the titles of my book, Relationships Unfiltered or Revisiting Relational Ministry. I think there's good reason for us to say we can't do away with relational ministry because of the way the culture is constructed. Young people are all about relationships. But it does mean, I think, that we have to be really intentional, and I would add intentional theologically, in asking what is a relationship and what is a relationship for. And that is, I think, the task of those of us who are thinking about youth ministry. What do we mean when we say relationship? And I think that's some of the things that we've talked about earlier. But my assertion would be that it just is, and that we need to enter into that that reality.
So getting back to the difference between place sharing and influencing, and we were talking about what it looks like to place share with a young person, or even with others who are who are adults.
Yeah.
How does that look from the perspective of, if let's say you're not a youth worker, but you're a member of the church. You want to have a decent relationship with young people in the church. What do you do?
Yeah, and I think we tend to overthink it. I mean, we're talking about the core of our humanity in many ways, and it's almost too bad that we have to think, well, how can we have authentic, real relationships with our young people? I mean, these are things that
from the time I was a teenager, the big word then was generation gap.
Yeah, right.
It was clear that there was a barrier between the adult world and the teen world, and no one knew quite how to bridge that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do overthink it, and I think in many ways, you ask the question, if you're just you're a member of a congregation and you want to be in relationship with young people, what does that look like? What does it mean? This may sound oversimplistic, but it's being yourself with them, and that means inviting them into our lives. And usually what we think the objective of our ministries, our relational ministry is we usually think it's our goal is to get them to get the young person to open up to us. So often we carpet bomb them with questions. So tell me, how's school? How's home? How's reading your Bible going? Who are you dating? And we just keep on asking these questions. And of course, if you spent any time with a 15-year-old boy, you know you get one answer, maybe two, which is a yes or no and a grunt. I mean, that's about the best that you can get. And I think it's actually the other way around. I think the objective for us is not to get them to open up to us, and therefore we can say, oh, I'm good at getting 16-year-olds to open up to me, therefore I'm good at youth ministry. The objective is the other way. I think the goal is to get to for us to open our lives up to them, to invite them to come near to us and watch as we live our lives, watch as we struggle with having to bury one of our parents or raising our own children. And I hope we can talk a little bit about it. I think there's boundaries within that. And I don't mean being radically open so you have no freedom in the midst of that. But I think it is saying, come close to me. Live near to me. Hear my story and let me hear yours. But usually we think it's the other way around. Your job as the volunteer or as a paid youth worker is to get the kids to open up and to share something. I think there's real power when we'll open our lives up to young people. And it's no wonder we see so many young people leaving the church after high school graduation and not coming back ever, or coming back in their late 30s, because they've never really experienced an adult living out their faith. They've never really experienced a faith community living out its faith. They've experienced a youth ministry, and they've experienced volunteers who are trying to be volunteers, trying to be youth ministry people, and not human beings in their frailty, in their suffering, in their joy, seeking God within great doubt and great hope.
I know with my own children, that's exactly the complaint. You know, if as teenagers, they would say, why do those people have to, you know, pry about everything? And why do they have to, you know, come up and be so pushy and won't leave you alone? Mm-hmm. And it makes them, you know, not want to come back. Yeah. They don't want to have to keep putting up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you do your best to try to make excuses for people who are who behave that way, mm-hmm. and who don't know any other way to approach a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a problem because it does turn them mm-hmm. off to church.
Yeah,
not just my kids, but their friends too experience the same kind of a thing mm-hmm. at church. Well, let's talk about. We have a minute or two left. Let's talk about the boundaries for a second.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I think the element that we often miss in when we formulate relationships, and especially in the context of ministry, is that relationships, to be a relationship, have to be both, as Bonhoeffer has said, both open and closed. And we usually think that a good youth worker or a good relational minister is someone who's radically open. But I think it's just as important that we learn how to be closed and be able to say things like, you know what, I've just had enough, or I'm on vacation, or how about you call me when the sun's up? I know you just broke up with your boyfriend and you were dating for a whole 2 days and this is really hard for you, but you know, can you call me when the sun's up? Maybe a story would help if we have time for it. But when I was new in ministry, I was invited over to this ministry partner's house. This person that I was going to be in ministry with invited me over for dinner, and I went over and was sitting in the kitchen waiting for the meal to be ready and watching his wife hurry the meal ready and get their kids ready for dinner. And all of a sudden the doorbell rang and my ministry partner went to the door and then he shut the door behind him and he was gone. And so I stood there for a few minutes and I was, of course, too young and too stupid to ask his wife if she needed any help. So I just stood there with my Coke in my hand and just watched her. And finally dinner was ready and we sat down and we ate pasta and had a salad and he still hadn't returned. He had went to the door and just disappeared. Well, the ice cream was being put on the table for dessert when he finally came back in. And I thought something must be terribly wrong. So about halfway through the meal, I asked his wife, I said, you know, where's your husband? What's happened? And she said, well, I'm sure the guys stopped by. And I thought, the guys? Maybe he's got a gambling problem. It was, you know, the mob stopped by. She said, oh, you know, the guys from his Bible study. And then she mentioned that this happens quite often. Well, when he came back in the door, having missed the whole meal, I asked him, assuming that one of the kids must have been suicidal, for him to be gone with a guest over for the whole meal. And so I asked him, I said, is everything okay? He said, oh yeah, everything's fine. And then he gave me this look like he was trying to teach me something. And he said, well, you know, that's relational ministry for you. It just isn't 9 to 5. And as he said that, I looked at his wife and his kids who were ravaged and tired. And I thought, this is relational ministry. That, you know, you leave your guest, you leave your family. Yeah. And he had mentioned that this happens a few times a week, that these kids stop by. And the more I thought about it, I realized that, you know, that I don't think that's relational ministry. And what actually was happening is when he went to the door and spent most of his evenings outside with these kids, that he wasn't a human being to those kids. He was a jungle gym. And they would come over and he would hang out with them and they'd have something to do. But if he would have just even once in a while went to the door and said, guys, great to see you, glad you stopped by, but I'm having dinner with my family right now, or it's story time and I'm reading my kids a story, he all of a sudden becomes more than a youth worker.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's a human being who calls them into their own authentic humanity to be in relationship with. He becomes somebody really interesting to be in relationship with. But when he spends every night outside with them, neglecting his own family, where he's radically open to them without being closed, well, then he's just a commodity that they can consume.
Yeah.
And I don't think young people need youth worker commodities. I don't even think they need youth ministries. I think they need people who will be in relationship with them. And if he would have went to the door and said, guys, great to see you, but I'll catch up with you tomorrow at school. I've got some other things going on. He becomes a person to be in relationship with. And I think that's what young people need.
You've been watching You're Included, a production of Grace Communion International.